Despite their name, Russian olive trees have very little to do with real olives. You can't make oil out of their fruits, and they're only very distantly related to true olive trees. They're only called olive trees because of their medium size, their silvery green color, and their small dry fruits. If you travel in the West, you'll likely see lots of these trees along rivers and in riparian areas. But they haven't always been here. They were introduced to the United States as an ornamental plant sometime around the turn of the 20th century. When Russian olive trees enter an ecosystem, they often take over. They grow faster than other native plants and outcompete them for water and nutrients. Their dying leaves upset the balance of nitrogen in the ecosystem. Native birds and wildlife don't nest in them, so it knocks their populations out of balance as well.
One way to think about invasive plants is sort of like biological pollution.
That's Amanda Kenzie. She's a community science director at Mountain Studies Institute in Durango.
By contrast, if we had an oil spill, it's terrible and it's really bad, but we can clean that oil up and then it's out of the river.
But invasive species are different.
They refeed every year that they're putting out seeds, just exponentially reproducing. And then each one of those seeds becomes a new tree that can reproduce. And so the problem just grows and grows and grows.
Some Russian olive stands in deserts and in the warmer low elevations are too thick to remove all at once. But along the Animas River above Durango, Kenzie says temperatures are a little too cold for the trees to really take hold. But it might not always be like that. Warming average temperatures may make it easier for the trees to grow at those higher elevations in the future. Most public lands agencies have programs to get rid of Russian olive trees. But Kenzie explains land ownership boundaries between public and private lands look kind of like a checkerboard. Public lands agencies don't work on the private lands, so Mountain Studies Institute has teamed up with local land conservancy organizations to reach out to the private landowners and help them clear the trees from their properties. The landowners share the cost and workloads of the species removal with the organizations.
And as those people were willing to eradicate Russian olive on their parcels, they could talk to their neighbors. And I found that neighbors talking to neighbors was the most powerful tool.
But you can't just cut down a Russian olive tree. The plants quickly begin to regrow after they're cut.
I have seen literally hundreds and hundreds of resprouts come from one cut stump.
So Mountain Studies Institute hopes to eradicate the trees by cutting them down and also applying herbicides. But she says they're being careful.
When it comes to herbicide, we definitely don't want to see tons of chemicals going into our waterways. That's not the way herbicide should be used. The way we're using herbicide in this case is extremely localized, just very carefully applying it to stump by stump.
Some of the smallest trees can be sprayed at the base to kill them completely. The larger ones can be sliced at the trunk and injected with a small amount of chemical to create standing dead trees for wildlife habitat. And the trees can also be cut down completely and sprayed at the stump so they won't grow back. Young people from the Southwest Conservation Corps do most of the labor.
The landowners that I've worked with to remove Russian olive have always said they just are so impressed that these kids are out there day in and day out with chainsaws, and it's hot sometimes, and they've got chaps and hard hats and all the safety equipment.
The goal is to return the habitat back to how it was before the Russian olives were introduced.
We really want to restore our watershed back to being dominated by native cottonwoods and river birch and willows and the native species that should be there.
Mountain Studies Institute says it's cleared about 300 acres of Russian olive trees so far. They've also used the same tactics for the similarly invasive tamarisk tree. And Kenzie's team has found a way for their project to have even more impact in the community.
One of the problems we ran into was what to do with all the waste materials after we cut down the Russian olive. And so this project's been interesting because as it's gone on and as I've talked to more and more people in the community, opportunities and the answers kind of present themselves.
One of the Rotary clubs in town distributes firewood to low-income seniors and families in the area to help them heat their homes in the winter. Travis Ward is a member of Durango Daybreak Rotary.
You know, Amanda would call, say, well, we've got a pile out by Anima School. So we'd go out there and load it up with whoever could volunteer that day and take it out to our wood site. And hopefully it'll be aged enough to use next winter.
Kenzie says there is currently a lot of community support for the program, and she's hoping it can continue. She's working with local organizations and state agencies to secure funding for the upcoming summer. For KSJD and Western Slope Resources Reporting, I'm Austin Cope.
This story is part of Western Slope Resources Reporting, a collaboration between KSJD and four other radio stations in rural Colorado, made possible with support from the Gates Family Foundation.